Welcome to What Your GP Doesn't Tell You, the podcast for both doctors and patients with me, Liz Tucker. This week, I'm talking to Beth Zubeg-Kanya, a dietitian and nutritionist who has spent over 30 years developing very low carb, otherwise known as ketogenic diets, to treat a range of both physical and mental health conditions. She's worked with many of the medical pioneers in this field. I heard Beth speak last November at a conference, Metabolic Psychiatry, Understanding How Modifying Metabolism Can Create Mental Health. I was really keen to get her on the podcast because I've now done several episodes about the use of ketogenic diets to treat different illnesses. By restricting carbohydrates, these diets result in the body breaking down fat for energy, producing a chemical called a ketone. And it's these ketones that fuel the body in the absence of glucose. Many people have asked me about the practicalities of following this dietary approach, so Beth seemed the perfect guest to discuss these issues. She explains her keto strategy. This includes the importance of transitioning slowly to avoid what is often known as keto flu, when patients can feel under the weather during the first few days of a ketogenic diet, the role of medium-chain triglyceride oils, or MCT for short, and how her dietary approach also involves her own specially designed smoothie recipe, which will be available to all Patreon supporters and subscribers to the podcast mailing list. But before we get to Beth's interview, a brief request from me. If you enjoy this podcast and would like to leave a review on Spotify or Apple, that would be much appreciated. It really helps. You can also become a paid supporter of the podcast at patreon.com/ What Your GP Doesn't Tell You, or via PayPal on my website, whatyourgpdoesnttellyou.com. A huge amount of work goes into both the research and production of this podcast, so even a small amount of money makes a huge difference. And you can find out more information about the pod on my website, where you can sign up for the podcast mailing list, follow me on Twitter at Liz C. Tucker, and on my Substack account, liz.tucker.substack.com. Many thanks. Now back to the interview with Beth. Beth Zubeg-Kanya has coached medical professionals, patients and families on the safe and effective use of ketogenic diets for neurological disorders and an increasing number of other illnesses. Alongside her dietary practice, she's also the primary consultant for the charity The Charlie Foundation, which helps promote the use of ketogenic diets for various medical conditions. Here's Beth's interview. So Beth, thanks very much indeed for joining the podcast today.
You're welcome. It's a pleasure.
I think to begin with, it would be really helpful to explain what we mean, Beth, by the process ketosis. What does it actually involve?
So if we talk about nutritional ketosis, and that's what I'm an expert in, nutritional ketosis means getting ketones from your diet. The way to do that is by following a ketogenic diet. And there are 5 different ketogenic diets that we have used for epilepsy for many, many years. The classic ketogenic diet has been used for 100 years. What is common among all of these ketogenic diets is that the main macronutrient in any nutritional ketotic diet is fat. And then we have protein. So we have to always supply sufficient protein for what the individual needs. It's different if you're a child and an adult. And then the last macronutrient is carbohydrate, and that is what it is most restrictive in. So this is totally upside down from what people usually eat in our culture, in today's culture. Most people eat most of their calories, most of their energy from carbohydrate, and then a moderate amount of their energy from protein and the lowest amount from fat. And this is why it's confusing to people, because people have learned to avoid fat.
And Beth, you can also bring about this ketosis, producing these ketones in the body, not just by diet, but also by fasting.
Yes, the various methods of getting someone into a state of ketosis, because it's not just the nutritional ketogenic diet. There's other ways. So the old-fashioned method getting into ketosis is with fasting. And there is mention of this in the writings of Hippocrates. In fact, that's where the notion came for epilepsy. There is biblical reference to fasting for epilepsy as well. In fact, it says fasting and prayer are the cure for a demonic possession. And in biblical days, when somebody was having a convulsive seizure, it was thought that they were possessed by the devil. So even in biblical times, people recognize that if you just let somebody fast, not feed them, that the seizure would go away. So that's really the origin of the medical ketogenic diet for epilepsy that Dr. Wilder at the Mayo Clinic described over 100 years ago. And it's actually the foundation for the same ketogenic diet that we use today. Because Dr. Wilder said, well, you can't fast people for very long. So that's why he created this ketogenic diet.
And then I think over 10 years ago, you began to realize that you might need to apply what you'd learned to your own diet when you became pre-diabetic.
Yes, I've been working with ketogenic therapies for over 30 years. So I'm in my 60s, but a little over 10 years ago, I started to develop insulin resistance, like a lot of women who are starting to enter perimenopause. And I started to have hot flashes. And I started to feel bloated and started to develop acne and all these things that are very common when women enter perimenopause. It's also associated with insulin resistance. And in fact, I was developing insulin resistance. It is pre-diabetes. It means you're taking in more carbohydrate than your body can handle. And so I was an expert in ketogenic diet therapy. And I thought, oh my gosh, I need to put myself on this. And the reason I have to tell you, the reason I found out is I was testing breath ketone meters, which is a newer development. It's a device that you can breathe into. It calculates the amount of ketones that you are breathing out. And I was putting myself into ketosis to test this meter. And I realized that when I got myself into ketosis, the hot flashes went away, the bloating went away. So I would be in ketosis for several days and all those symptoms went away. And then when I was done with testing, I sent the thing back, went back to eating my high carb, healthy diet, you know, with whole grains and lots of fruits and vegetables. And all my hot flashes came back. And then I realized, and then I got an insulin level and then confirmed that I was developing diabetes. I was becoming insulin resistant, which is not uncommon as you get older. So this isn't unusual at all. This is quite common. And a lot of people don't know they have this.
Which is interesting because as a dietitian working in ketogenic diets, I would have assumed that you'd be one of the last people that this would happen to.
Well, you would assume. But at the time, I was using it for just epilepsy, and I wasn't thinking outside of the box. We didn't have all these other applications of mental health and dementia. I mean, those are more recent developments in the last 10 years, and this was right before that all happened. So I think eventually I would have connected it. But I was also getting this foggy brain. People will say, I can't keep a thought in my head. Where are my keys? Or I walk into a room, where am I? So that fogginess was happening to me, and it really freaks you out because I felt so sharp for so many years, and I can keep numbers and dates and remember people's names and all that.
Because in fact, sometimes postmenopausal women are concerned that they're developing dementia,
right,
because of these symptoms.
Yes, exactly. And I mean, I got all that back. That was temporary. I don't think I was insulin resistant for very long. It was probably brewing. And then all of a sudden, it just kind of like went full bloom. That's when the hot flashes started to occur. So I was pre-diabetic, and I've turned that around.
And as you say, it happened to you. It happens to an increasing number of people, because in industrialized countries, we eat many more carbs than we used to.
Yes, we kind of think it's so complicated to understand diabetes. But when you just say you're taking in more carbohydrate than your body can handle,
that's it.
Yeah. I mean, that's like lactose intolerant. You're taking in more milk than your body can handle. It's a very simple concept that we can understand. Once we understand things, we're much more likely to take action. I hear this with so many women who have come back to me and said, oh my gosh, you're right. I was able to reverse this.
But of course, there's a couple of ways. Well, there's more than a couple of ways to reverse it. One would be to do a ketogenic diet. Another would be to hold your carbs down, keep your carbs, say, below 100 grams a day.
Yes.
You wouldn't necessarily have to go full keto.
Right. And I don't say I do full keto all the time. I do intermittent fasting. One day a week, I do 32 hours of fasting. I might do that more in the wintertime when I'm less active. I don't ever exceed 50 grams of carb a day. And I'll tell you why. I just don't feel good the next day. I've tried having something sweeter just because I've enjoyed it with other people, and it affects me the next day. So I just decided, like, no sugar. I don't eat sugar at all. You know, I have family members who kind of push me on that. Like, why don't you just have a little bit? I have to explain, well, I have insulin resistance. I can't. But also the other part of it is I don't enjoy it. And even my palate, something sweet on my palate is like, whoa, this is not good. I don't like this taste. It almost is like tasting something very acidic. It just doesn't appeal to me. So, you know, I feel like I've gotten through all of those hurdles by testing and trying things out. And I'm still trying different foods. I'm testing a bread for somebody that's creating a keto bread. And it's definitely low carb. It's not that it's high in carb, but I'll try different things out. And I know my palate is different from others because when I'm reporting, it's too sweet. Others are saying it's not sweet enough. So I know my palate has definitely changed to be more of a, you know, like a paleo palate, because this is sort of ancestral diet that I'm eating. I'm eating real whole foods. I'm not eating processed foods.
But I know just for myself that if I haven't eaten anything sweet for a while, and then I do, it suddenly feels much sweeter.
Yes.
And that's just if I haven't eaten anything sweet for a week or so.
Yes.
Now, what puzzles me is if you look at the recommended food groups in the US in the food pyramid, you'd be eating, I don't know, 200, 300 grams a day. But I'm really surprised to see that the US government recommended carb intakes is actually only 130 grams a day. So there seems to be a bit of a contradiction between those two pieces of advice.
Definitely. And if you go further to the dietary reference intakes and look at carbohydrate, you'll see that the guidelines were last updated in 2005, say they recognize that carbohydrate is not essential. Isn't that fascinating? We know protein is essential, and we know there are essential fatty acids, but carbohydrate is not. And there are cultures that live without carbohydrate. That's even quoted in the dietary guidelines. So there's definitely a confusion in the recommendations over what is being displayed in the media and even in the government media. If you go into hospitals and look through the nutrition department's guidelines, the diet manual and the handouts, it all emphasizes high carbohydrate diet, unless it's a modified diet for somebody that doesn't digest carbohydrates. There's specific diets for that. But in general, it's high carbohydrate, even for diabetics.
I was really surprised to see this, because if you think the traditional advice is to eat loads of carbs, so I was taken aback to see the figure of 130 grams of carbs, which in the West would really be a relatively low carb diet.
Right. And that guideline covers everybody from age one and over, which in itself is questionable. Like, why would a one-year-old who weighs 25 pounds have the same carbohydrate requirement as a man who's 6'3"? Why would that be the same? But at least one thing I can say, our guidelines say you should not eat over 130 carbohydrate, and even that's too high, but can you get down to 100? Because that in itself is probably safe. So that may be a starting place for some people, is just to get down to 100 grams a day.
Now, Dr. David Unwin in the UK, his simple recommendation to his diabetic patients, if they don't want to follow a full ketogenic diet, is simply to stick to less than 100 grams of carb a day.
Yes. It should not be a blanket statement that people should try a ketogenic diet. I'm actually very cautious about who uses keto because I've seen some of the adverse effects people can have, whether it's interaction with medications or their nutritional status before they try it. So I'm very cautious, and I'm involved with guidelines that we've written for epilepsy, and now we're writing for mental health on who's a candidate and what laboratory studies should you get before you consider starting a keto diet?
What are the key things that somebody would need to check before they went on a keto diet?
So you would want to be in good metabolic status with healthy liver enzymes. And I've worked with people who go in for a metabolic profile, which is a very standard type of laboratory test that every hospital has. It's called a complete metabolic panel. Part of it is to look at your liver to see if your liver enzymes are normal. And if they're very elevated, it means your liver is struggling to detoxify something and it's stressed. And that's not a good time to change to a ketogenic diet. It's your liver that makes ketones. You want a healthy liver to do that. So people that are on more than two medications might have a problem with this. And then there's even certain medications that we have identified that could be problematic when you go into ketosis or just even low carb. For example, the SGLT2 inhibitors, which is diabetes medication, you have to be cautiously following somebody who's cutting back on their carbs, because they can get into trouble with hypoglycemia very quickly.
And Beth, hypoglycemia occurs when your blood sugar is too low.
Yes. Diuretics are another one, some of the anti-seizure medications. So these are some of the cautions, and people need to be followed, and blood work needs to be done regularly so that they don't get into trouble. I have worked with emergency room doctors in problem solving somebody that came in ketosis. You know, they're treating themselves using internet knowledge, and they get into trouble with acidosis.
Can you explain what acidosis is?
Oh, acidosis is when your body is producing too much acid and it's not able to neutralize that acid. We can be in an alkaline state or we can be in an acidic state. Our body likes to be right in the middle, not acid, not alkaline, but right in the middle. And there are certain medications that can push you into an acidotic state, certain seizure medications, and some of these seizure medications also used for mental health. They can tip you into an acidotic state. And when you go keto, it can tip you further into this acidotic state initially until your body kind of compensates. But that can be a fragile time where somebody might pass out, vomit frequently, and get dehydrated. So in those early days of going into ketosis, which people refer to as keto flu, it can be a time of caution. We need to evaluate you and teach you how to hydrate or how to mitigate these issues if you are on certain medications.
I was going to say, with a couple of the medications that you mentioned, of course, if you've got diabetes and you start to go on the ketogenic diet, then hopefully you should be able to grade down your medications and in the best cases come off it.
Exactly. And Dr. David Unwin has proven that for diabetes. And so has Eric Westman here at Duke in the United States. They have proven that you can de-prescribe these diabetes medications on a low-carb or low-carb keto diet under medical supervision, of course.
And of course, the most damaging carbs are the simple carbs rather than the complex carbs that we get from fruit and vegetables. And of course, many of the simple carbs we eat come from ultra-processed food, which is actually developed to be as appealing as possible.
Yes, I delved into this recently for a talk that I gave about ultra-processed foods. Fascinated me to learn how several companies, I'm not going to say all of them, but the companies that make chips, for example, have a goal in mind. And the goal is to make their chips taste addictive so people buy more and keep buying more and more. Taste and the flavor on your tongue is like, I got to have more. You know, keep in mind that there's people out to pull you in so that you're addicted to their junk food. I mean, it has all these characteristics. It's got to dissolve quick. It's got to be powerful tasting. It has to have like a salty taste to it. And that's what chips are. I had a friend from a developing country come to the United States for the first time and go into our grocery store and just was overwhelmed at the chip aisle. She kept saying, there's a whole aisle just for this chips. And not nearly as a big of an aisle for vegetables, which is what she was used to seeing in her culture, fruits and vegetables and not packaged foods. So this is why the adage, shop the perimeter of the grocery store, which is where you would find most of the produce and the meat counter, the dairy, whereas the center of the grocery store is where the processed foods are. So if we kind of step back and think about why do we eat the groceries we eat, it's because we have just gotten used to the convenience and the taste, and we've sort of lost our way with what our ancestors ate. I remember growing up in a rural area where we pretty much ate off the land, and we bought half a beef or half of a pig, and we grew that pig ourselves. We got chicken eggs from the neighbor and chickens from another neighbor. That's within 100 years, and we've really gotten away from that so much that it's affected our palate. And changing is hard. So I've worked with children for 20 years in a children's hospital, and I've worked with adults for about 15. And it's much easier to work with a family and putting a child on a diet than it is to work with an adult, because adults usually are on their own, might have a partner, but oftentimes they're on their own, eating on their own and figuring things out. Much harder for them because they don't have that support system. So really on their own, I know it's hard, but I enjoy helping people do that, because I think for people that really want to change, I mean, there's nothing better than seeing somebody go from a state of just not realizing that they're in this food culture to a state of, not only do I realize that I don't want that anymore, I want to be healthy for the remainder of my years.
So I think it'd be really useful to talk about the practicalities of a keto diet. You suggest that people shouldn't plunge straight in, but should gradually move into the diet.
Yeah, I have a system that I develop of graduating slowly into keto therapy, and I'm happy to share it. It's not something I'm going to go out and patent. I actually developed this in my pediatric practice, and then I just carried it over to when I started working with adults, and that is starting working with just one meal a day, changing it to keto, and keeping the rest of your meals the way they are. Before we do this, I start people off by just saying, let's go sugar-free and get rid of highly processed foods. That's step one. And if people are able to do that and still interested in going keto, this is like pre-keto.
So that would be removing all flour, all sugar?
Yes.
Anything else?
Flour, sugar, and anything that has a food label that's more than 3 ingredients. I encourage them to start eating olive oil and even butter, and not margarine. So I do talk about good fats, bad fats.
Basically, cook from scratch.
From scratch, you know, I don't know if this is as prevalent in Europe as it is here, but there's so many home delivery meal services these days popping up. And some of them are very good. I have people that are willing to do that. A lot of them do keto, and if they don't do keto, they'll do low carb, and I can help them make that keto, whatever works for people. And I've had people who can't afford that, but have some very simple meals like eggs, tuna fish, sardines, low carb, high fat yogurt. So we're thinking of less expensive protein foods that they are used to eating, and we're going to make a meal out of that. And I have people that are able to do that, and they're not eating steak and they're not eating salmon, which, you know, we kind of glorify keto by showing those pictures. But I have people that can't afford to eat steak or salmon. So I have people that are able to do this long term with these simple protein rich foods. So anyways, we start off by cleaning up the diet, and it's a bit of a test to eventually say, this is not a good time in my life, can't do this right now, or okay, I'm getting it. I'm actually feeling a little better. Maybe I'm sleeping better. Maybe I don't have the midday slump, whatever. Usually there's some kind of a change that tells them, let's see if we can make this better. And then I talk to them about going into ketosis and how we're going to do that gradually so that we don't get keto flu, which it's highly preventable.
So you've got this preparation period where you're basically cleaning up food. So no flour, no sugar, and going back to basics. How long would people stay on that before you went to the next stage?
So we do that for at least 2 weeks, but it's usually the period of time it takes for them to get their blood work and for me to get the results. So it's usually a couple of weeks. For some people, longer. Some people, I can tell that they're like holding off. You know, they want to use up this in the kitchen. I want to use up all my bad food in the kitchen, where I'm telling them, you know, just throw it out because you don't want to waste it on yourself. And I'm telling them, get it out of the house, because in your moment of weakness, you're going to go have that, whether it's ice cream or bread or whatever you're storing. Get it out of the house if you really are serious about this. And then when we get to the point where we're going to move forward into keto, and I don't work with people that are just doing this to feel better. I work with people that are pretty sick. They either have a serious mental health disorder and they've tried medications, or epilepsy and they've tried medications, or dementia, or MS. And I work with a lot of people that have rare genetic metabolic disorders. So people with feeding tubes I work with. So these are people that are really sick and have tried a lot of things and they want to try keto. But we switch over one meal at a time. And so this can take 2 or 3 weeks because we'll switch over, let's say, breakfast to keto, keep the other meals the same. The next week we'll do breakfast and lunch, keep the last meal the same. And then the third week we switch over the third meal. So that ketosis is gently evolving and I'm teaching them about hydration. And then they're getting through this emotional part, which is huge. The emotional divorcing from all their comfort foods and finding alternatives. That's huge. And that takes time. People don't do that overnight.
Sure. One of your recommendations is to replace a meal using a smoothie made to your particular recipe. Can you explain why that's important?
Yeah, so I came up with this smoothie for a couple of reasons. One, I was realizing that people needed digestive support. I included in my intake survey questions about regularity and type of stool. So I know this stuff and I know some of the medications that they're on that can cause this. I have a chat with people. I want your bowels to be moving regularly, like daily. And I'll have people tell me, oh, that's never happened. And all right, or that's like years and years ago when I was a kid, maybe. So I introduce my keto smoothie, which is a high inulin smoothie with protein. And we can make it as ketogenic as we want or not ketogenic. So I give them a recipe and we can make it chocolate, can make it raspberry. It has a protein powder that's carb-free and they can pick their brand. You know, I'm not partial to particular brands for protein powder, but I am particular to the natural ingredients. And that is green banana and not a yellow banana, which is right. A truly green banana where you have to use a knife to open it.
I was going to say, they're quite difficult to peel, aren't they? Because I was eating a green banana the other day and I thought, gosh, how does anybody manage to peel one?
You have to use a knife. And of course, the other tip with this is that they're going to turn yellow in a couple of days. You can't eat them all, right? So you have to peel them and put them in the freezer to stop them from maturing. The starches that are in them are fiber. And as those starches mature, they break apart into simple sugars. And that's when they become sweet. So we're not using the banana for the starch, for the carb. We're using the banana for mainly the fiber. This inulin fiber is a particular type of fiber that your gut loves. It's like a feast, this inulin. And you're getting a nice dose of potassium, which is important to buffer acids that you develop as you start making ketones. So that's the second reason. We've got inulin, and we've got a nice dose of potassium. And it adds thickness to a smoothie. So nobody in the right mind would eat a green banana unless they just decided, I just want inulin, I don't care what it tastes like. But in a smoothie, you can camouflage it. So we include that. And I add avocado because avocado is an excellent source of good fat and also very high in magnesium, a mineral that a lot of people are low in. And it's very helpful in stimulating the gastrointestinal tract. So between the inulin and the magnesium, in about 3 days, people always come back to me and say, wow, that really worked. I'm going to have one of these every day. And I encourage them to have it as a meal every day for a couple of weeks just to get their digestive system going, you know, and then they can not use it as often or whatever they choose. It's perfectly fine nutritionally to include it as one of your keto meals. And quite frankly, a lot of people find that it's a relief to have a blender meal. It's something that they can throw together and freeze and grab and go on the run for breakfast or lunch. This is not usually their main meal of the day with family, but this is their meal on the go. So people appreciate having that option.
And would you be happy to share your smoothie recipe with the podcast listeners?
Yes, I can provide that for you.
Great, thank you. I'll send out the recipe to Patreon supporters and everyone on the mailing list a week after the podcast is published. Now, I'm interested, looking at the smoothie ingredients, it contains protein powder. Is that not an ultra-processed food?
It is not considered ultra-processed because the protein would be the only ingredient. So remember I said you don't want anything more than three ingredients. I have protein powders. One is made from cod. One has egg white powder and cod. There's egg white powder.
But I suppose the processing itself.
Yeah. It's not highly processed, but it is processed. I have people that have used hemp seeds, which is very low process, as their protein for a vegan formulation. So that could be used as well.
And from going into this process, how long does it usually take for you to start to see a result with your patients?
So it depends on the condition. For epilepsy, we say you got to wait at least 3 months. I would say most often people are experiencing benefits sooner, not complete cessation of seizures, but maybe less intense seizures or less length of time seizures. So some type of improvement people generally see within 3 months. And now we're seeing that for mental health disorders too, that it seems to take about 3 months. And to me, that makes so much sense because we're talking about mitochondria and tissue turnover and a lot of biological changes in the brain, which are really starting in the gut and then affecting the brain. And it takes time for your body to change over. You're not just flipping a switch. And people need to know this because I think people get frustrated that they're not seeing this type of change soon. But, you know, medications for these disorders take weeks and months sometimes to get up to a therapeutic level. So most of my patients are used to waiting this long for results. Many of my adults especially will say, you know what, I couldn't help myself. I was out and I had a chocolate and my ketones went down. Did I lose everything that I gained, you know, in the 4 weeks that I've been doing this? So that happens a lot too. And I tell people, you just learn from this. Next time you're out, you see chocolates, what are you going to do? Is it going to be the same? Or are you going to say, I'm going to make keto chocolate so that I can have chocolate too that doesn't have this sugar that's going to affect my glucose and my ketones?
I mean, do you find some people just find it impossible to stick to the restrictions that the diet involves?
I've never heard anybody say it's impossible. I've heard people say, I did it for 6 months. I felt great. And now they're not doing it anymore. Like, I think I need to go back to that. So I hear a lot of that. Yeah, I tried it for 6 months. And I typically will follow people at least 3 months. Then I don't hear from people again, or maybe a year later, I get an email or a Christmas card saying, I just want to tell you I'm doing fine. You know, this has changed my life and I've been able to loosen up and still maintain the benefits I've gotten. That's always great news because people want to know, how long do I have to do this? I'm a pretty strict nutritionist. I want people to get into ketosis, be as consistent as they can be, and then see if we can lighten up when they feel like they just have to ease off a little bit on how much fat they're consuming or the restrictiveness of it, which is preventing them from going to this restaurant or this gathering. But I pretty much tell them, I want you to really give this your all. So let's find a time in your life where things are kind of quiet, where you can focus on you, because you're going to be happy that you concentrated this time to see if you can get the benefits, to see if this is really helping you or not. Because I feel like people appreciate knowing that they can get benefits if they do it more rigidly initially, knowing that they could probably liberalize later on.
So I guess if we know that the average American, or indeed the average Brit, eats several hundred grams of carb a day, it might well be that if somebody is only eating 100 grams a day, the results might be less dramatic, but there could also, I suppose, arguably be potential health benefits to that.
Oh, yeah. And I've seen that. I've seen people, and in fact, it's a lot of my friends and family who know what I do and aren't my patients. We entertain a lot, and I serve a unprocessed buffet, tell them what to make. I give them recipes, no sugar. I do it gluten-free because there's a couple of people in the family that can't have gluten. People just love it. But I don't preach about it. I don't talk about it ever unless somebody asks me. So, you know, once in a while, someone will corner me and like, Auntie Beth, I've been trying to follow this on my own and I can just tell a difference, you know, and they're not doing keto. They're just lowering their carbohydrate intake and making sure they get enough protein. People will benefit from that. They don't have to go into ketosis to get some significant benefits.
Because a lot of people have argued that as we get older, we should actually increase our protein.
Yeah, as you get older, you can start atrophying your lean muscle tissue. And so you need to make sure you're getting sufficient protein for those essential amino acids to replace and to prevent muscle atrophy. I look at diet histories all the time, and most of the people I'm working with are not consuming enough protein. And so that's what they work on when I'm telling them, get rid of sugar. When you figure out what you're going to eat, it's got to start with protein. What am I going to have with hard-boiled eggs? What am I going to have with tuna fish? So it makes them think differently because people are thinking more about sandwiches or pizza or fast food, burritos, things that they can pick up or get quickly. And that's high carb. So yeah, the focus changes. And then in a strict ketogenic diet, which is how I start with people with severe medical conditions, I have them weigh out their food for a month, and then you're going to estimate because you have no clue how much fat I'm going to teach you to eat. It's going to be so not intuitive to you, and you're going to have your protein, and we're going to limit the carb. I actually have an online program called Keto Diet Calculator that I can give them access to. I can set their diet up for them and they can go in and do all the creating that they want or modifying, adjusting, taking the smoothie that I put in there for them. And they might want to add in berries to the chocolate smoothie or something like that and take away something else in the meal to balance out the carbs. It's a way I can help guide them with really ketogenic meals so that they get into ketosis, they're getting enough protein, they're getting enough fat, certainly getting enough calories. We don't do calorie counting, focus more on the macros and getting sufficient fat. When I hear people talk about keto, they don't even mention dietary fat. And you have to mention dietary fat because that's where we're going to get the ketones. That's the nutritional ketosis.
So your body's either going to run on carbs or fat. And if you haven't got enough fat, you're not going to be able to go into ketosis.
Right. Almost everybody that's coming to me now for a consultation has already put themselves on a keto diet and they're just eating protein. They're just eating lots of meat, lots of fish or poultry and not eating the vegetables or fruit. And they're not putting fat on anything. Well, that's not keto. That's carnivore. For maintenance and for a nutritionally balanced diet, we want to use the fat for making ketones.
Now, you touched on keto flu and that this careful transition can avoid that. But can you explain what keto flu is and what causes it?
Yeah, so keto flu, it can be a variety of symptoms, nausea, headache, brain fog, feeling faint. So these are all symptoms that could also be hypoglycemia, right? How do you know? Check your glucose. So rule out hypoglycemia. Many of the people that come to me that have started themselves on keto because they're waiting to get in to see me and they just get so excited, they just cut out all the carbs and then they tell me they passed out. One of my doctor friend told me she almost passed out at work. And I said, get yourself glucose tested. You're in a hospital. Just have a nurse check your glucose. And sure enough, her glucose was tanked. And she's a doctor. She should know better, right? So if you're going to be checking your blood ketones, use a meter that can also check blood glucose. And there's a couple meters out there that do both. So check your glucose while you're going into ketosis, because if you're hypoglycemic, that's an easy fix. You just drink a little apple juice and that brings it back up. Electrolyte loss is another common one, and that's from the diuretic effect that a ketogenic state can cause. When you're consuming carb, you absorb a certain amount of water for every gram of carb that you take in. Well, if you're going low carb, you're not absorbing the water. In fact, you're diuresing it. You're losing the water. And with that water goes minerals, sodium chloride, maybe even magnesium, maybe calcium. So people will complain of being dehydrated, or I've had people that have even had kidney stones because they do get dehydrated, they're not drinking enough fluids, and all of a sudden they've got pain because they're passing a stone. So that can be also problematic too. But this is why we do blood work initially, to look at their electrolytes. Are you safe from a mineral standpoint to be even doing keto, or do we need to supplement you with some salt while you're going through keto? And I tell people, definitely salt your foods when you're going into ketosis to prevent that diuretic effect of losing sodium and feeling faint. So all those can be symptoms. If you start keto gradually, you know how to hydrate yourself and put salt on your foods, you can prevent all that.
Now, I think I eat a reasonably healthy diet, around 100 grams of carbs a day, which means I can include foods like potatoes. But if I was eating a ketogenic diet, I'd be eating far fewer carbs than that.
Yes, low carb would be considered under 100 grams. You can have potatoes, lots of butter in those potatoes, right? I would recommend.
But if I was on 20 grams a day, I couldn't.
Exactly, you couldn't. And do we need 20 grams a day? I mean, I have people that start off with 15 or 20 grams a day, but in 6 months, they're eating 50 grams and getting the same benefit. It's just that, you know, we've started low to get them into a consistent state of ketosis, and with the belief that this will get them results sooner than later. And then when they get those results and they start feeling like they got it, then they start increasing their carbs a little bit and feel like, I'm still good, I can still do this. And most often people are liberalizing. Now, I had a woman recently who I've been actually following pretty closely for 3 years. And she was liberalizing. Now, she has bipolar disorder. She did have anorexia nervosa, which she feels like she's completely in remission from. She had migraines that sometimes were so bad she had to be hospitalized for like a week at a time to get them resolved. She started to liberalize after she got to a really good place for a couple years being strict. And she realized her brain wasn't functioning as well. She was taking more sick days from work. And she finally emailed me and she said, I went back to the planned meals and weighing foods because I feel like I'm losing everything I gained. And then after being back on these calculated meals where she was weighing foods, she got herself into consistent ketosis. Her brain like recovered. So, you know, she's unusual. I think she has a genetic metabolic disorder, and that's how I got her as a referral from a researcher. They know that she has a mitochondrial issue. They just can't get a diagnosis around it. But she definitely has all of the characteristics of somebody with a mitochondrial disorder. And then she had all this other mental health. That's an unusual case. I haven't run across that very often, but she definitely is somebody that couldn't be liberal.
I don't think I could cope with that level of fat.
I know. It's so much. I mean, people are like, you got to be kidding me. You can't eat this. But they can't, you know, and there's ways to hide it. And a smoothie is a really good example of a way to hide a lot of fat because you don't feel like you're eating something high in fat. But I do feel that people need to know that fat is an important component of each meal because it slows the digestion of carb. You know, we can talk about the glycemic index of, let's say, a processed food like bread. It's higher than 50. How do you make the glycemic index lower of bread without changing the bread? You eat it with a lot of butter on it, and that lowers it to like 40. So that's the trick.
Or you eat your fat before you eat any bread at all.
Yeah, somebody did a study on that recently. They eat the fat first. I think that's taken a little bit far. I mean, I have people that do, that'll just drink olive oil or eat some butter before they eat anything else. For me, I want it on my food. I want it melted into my food.
Because hopefully you still want to eat for pleasure.
Yeah, and that's a really good point. I mean, it's not just your sustenance and your enjoyment that you do 3 times a day. This is also your medicine. But we do want it to be joyful too. And I have to tell you, like a lot of the kids that I worked with who are on much higher fat diets than adults, one of our strategies to get the fat in is just have them drink MCT oil before they eat the meals.
Well, that's actually one thing I wanted to ask you about, adding the additional ketones to the diet, because you've got extra ketone salts, you've got the medium chain triglycerides or ketone esters. Which of those do you prefer?
I prefer the MCT oil, medium chain triglycerides, because I've been using them for 35 years. There is a long history of MCTs being used in infant formulas because natural breast milk has MCTs in it. And the ketone salts and esters are definitely a more recent product. People send me samples all the time. Like, I try them out, but they're not something I use regularly because I don't think they taste that good. And MCT oil actually has zero taste and zero odor, and it's very easy to incorporate into food. So going back to these kids, you know, a lot of the kids were not opposed to drinking. In fact, they get into a routine of drinking 2 or 3 ounces of MCT, and then they have their meal. So it slows the rise of their glucose. These are kids with epilepsy, and we're trying to get really good seizure control. So it makes sense. Get it over with and then eat the meal.
So how much medium-chain triglyceride oil or MCT oil were the children taking?
Most of the kids that I was working with were taking between 30 and 50 grams of MCT oil per meal.
So a lot of MCT oil?
Yeah, what we would consider a lot.
And what about adults using it?
I do use it with most of my adults too. The beauty of MCTs is that they don't go through your entire digestive tract. They kind of just shortcut to the liver. It's a more instant ketone. And if you use it with other fats like olive oil, which is long chain, you have an instant and then you have a more longer acting. So it's nice to use two different fats in a meal, actually, not just the MCTs. And the MCTs don't have essential fatty acids, so you can't just use only MCTs. And the other benefit of MCTs is that they have a mild laxative effect. Some people like that. They don't use up carnitine, which is a whole other topic. So there's lots of benefits.
So what's the MCT oil dosage that the adults were taking?
With adults and with anyone, I start low and work up. If you just start with a big dose, it's probably going to send you to the bathroom in minutes. So you need to start low and work up. So the adults that I work with, we start with like 5 grams or a teaspoon at each meal and work up to maybe 30 grams at each meal.
Which would be a couple of tablespoons.
Yeah, at each meal. So not just once a day.
So 6 tablespoons a day.
Yeah, it seems like a lot.
Yeah.
But, you know, once they get into the habit of doing it, it really gets them into a good, consistent state of ketosis. There are people that have asked me, can I just drink it all at once? And that seems like a good idea, but it wouldn't. You'd be running to the bathroom.
You wouldn't need your smoothie anyway.
Yeah, right. And the smoothie is a good way to put it in there because it doesn't add any flavor. It just hides it.
We've been talking about all this fat we're adding to the diet. And of course, historically, there's been a huge concern from doctors and dietitians that high levels of fat will lead to heart disease.
Yeah, so that is the most concerning feature of ketogenic therapies. I've heard this for so many years, and I can tell you just a couple things briefly. One, in 2020, the American College of Cardiology put out a statement that saturated fats don't cause heart disease. And they listed the saturated fats, butter, chocolate, animal fats. These have saturated fats, but they don't cause heart disease. So that was refreshing to hear that from them finally in 2020. But people want the science. People want to know what happens to their LDL-C on a keto diet because sometimes they go up. And I'm happy to say that there is now very compelling, well-done research funded by a citizen advocacy group led by David Feldman, whose name you might know.
I do.
He really has wrangled in experts and gotten this research. He's been working on this for years. And he himself is not only an athlete, but he experienced very, very high LDL levels on keto. Yet his heart scan is stellar, has no cardiovascular disease. And so that's why he was like, this is a conundrum. And it wasn't just happening to him. As soon as he got this out there on social media, other people started saying, I have this too. So he crowdsourced to get funds together to do this really good research. And they just released actually preliminary findings. It is well explained on a little YouTube video that I watched a couple days ago about the theory behind why people have high LDLs or develop high LDLs on a well-formulated ketogenic diet. In a nutshell, it's nothing to be concerned about. It's actually cardioprotective. But to be able to explain that and then publish it is what we need. The there's valid concern. I would be concerned too, especially anybody with familial history of heart disease. I mean, I remember taking a little boy off keto at age one because his lipids went through the roof, but he was seizure free. And we got him off of all of his medications. And there's family history of heart disease. And we actually came to the conclusion with the family and the doctors, you got to take this kid off the diet. And I tried changing his diet, lowering the fat, doing all extra virgin olive oil, all these dietary things to try and get his lipids improved. And really nothing made a huge dent. Fortunately, he maintained his seizure freedom, which is great because only a year on keto is not what's advised for epilepsy. It's 2 to 3 years at least.
But sometimes because children's brains seem to be more plastic.
Yeah.
They seem to get long-term benefit, don't they?
Yeah. I've heard from this family. He's all grown up now. He's probably in his 20s now. No more seizures. But his lipids normalize. So it's a concern and we need the science.
Now, one of the things I think people can really struggle with on a keto diet is they can't eat bread, they can't eat cake or any other sort of baked goods. So are there low-carb alternatives that you've found?
Yes, there's actually keto low-carb alternatives. So essentially, we've taken the gluten-free recipes from the gluten-free world and made them keto by incorporating fat into them. And I did a cookbook with quite a few of my patients who offered recipes that they came up with. We published it through the Charlie Foundation. So the Charlie Foundation sells it and they, you know, they get the proceeds. And it's sold around the world. You can purchase this through the Charlie Foundation anywhere in the world as a downloadable PDF. And so there's all the favorites, chocolate cake, bread, a couple different types of bread, rolls, crackers, even a tortilla is in there. I think it's like a dozen recipes and they've been time tested and I've made all of them multiple times and they're keto. They're not just low carb, they're also keto. I had a family who just wrote to me recently and said, we want to make these for the rest of the family. People are finding that they're not sweet enough. What can we do? And I taught them how to add some date paste, add some carb, it's not significant. It added 5 grams of carb to the whole recipe, which would be divided by 10 pieces at least. So it was adding a little bit more sweetness for people that don't do keto. It's called Keto Bakery Cookbook, and you can get it through the Charlie Foundation.
And the Charlie Foundation is a charity which has really helped promote ketogenic diets for epilepsy and in recent years expanded this dietary approach. Beth, do you have their website address? Very happy to give it out on the podcast.
Yes, it's simply charliefoundation.org.
Thank you.
So initially for epilepsy, but in recent years, they've opened the doors to all conditions. So you'll find information and videos of people that have been interviewed about brain tumor and mental health. So we're adding interviews regularly to it.
If people want to find out more information in general about ketogenic diets, where's a good place for them to start?
I think the Charlie Foundation is the best place to start. We've got recipes. We've got centers around the world that have keto programs, mostly for epilepsy, but more and more we're adding other conditions, mainly mental health.
Well, that's great. Thank you so much, Beth. Really useful information about the practicalities of a ketogenic diet. So thank you so much for sparing the time to talk.
You're very welcome.
Goodbye.
Bye-bye.
Hope you enjoyed the latest episode of the podcast. And if you've enjoyed the show, if you could leave a review, that would be much appreciated. It really helps. Many thanks for listening. Bye for now.